And hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. We are looking today at positive mind because it's very important. I was sitting with a group of men yesterday. I run a group, and there's a group I run which are all men. And these guys gather with me every 2 weeks. And we sit and we talk and we ask the question about what is the authentic self? What is the real you? And is that what you aspire to? Is that what you look for? At the end of the road, you know, when you get to the end of your life, how do you want to be? Well, the consensus seemed to be that the way most people want to be is honest. Now, honest. I don't mean honesty as a judgment. I don't mean honesty as good as opposed to lying, which is bad. But honesty meaning that I want to be myself. I want to live as if I am being myself. I want to love what I love and not love what I don't love and not make believe. I don't want to play falsely. I want to be living the life I want to lead. I want to be doing the work I believe in. Authentic. An authentic life. I remember I was impressed by Zorba the Greek, the film, the movie, and the book as well, because that seemed to be the essence of Zorba, that he said, I am what I am, and that's the way I am. I'm made this way. So our question today is about authenticity. It's about this question. There are a number of people who tried to come up with a technical description of what is authenticity. They said it is the unimpeded operation of one's true or core self in one's daily enterprise. That means your real self is operating in everything you do. Doctors Kernis and Goldman identified four separate and somewhat concrete components of authenticity that they measured in a written test. The first and most fundamental is self-awareness. They said in order for you to be authentic, you have to be aware of yourself. You can't be authentic if you're not aware of yourself, if you're acting out some drama. You know, like, for example, if you're neurotic and you're living a neurotic life. Let's say you're a young man who had trouble with his father when you were young. And you're just feeling like you have to, you know, your father was a criminal, he was bad to you, and you were mean to him. And so you grew up and you became a corrections officer. Now, somehow in your life, you're acting out this very drama from early childhood of having seen your father as a criminal, in a way, because he treated you badly, and you becoming a corrections officer, so now you keep all the criminals in check. And so people say, what do? How do you like your work? And you say, I love what I do. It feels authentic. Well, it could feel authentic if it's based on some neurosis from early childhood. So authenticity can't be judged by just, it feels right. Because, you know, very often being authentic feels wrong. Feels bad. It's painful. For example, telling someone who you care about what you really feel about their choices, or if they say, does this dress look good on me? Your authentic self might tell the truth. Whereas otherwise, you might just lie to them. How do you want to be? How do you want to be when you grow up? Do you want to be authentic? Do you want it to be? Maybe not. One of the men I was talking to said, no. You are authentic to yourself, and if it means you lie to the people around you just to keep them in check because they want you to lie, it's okay. He said it's no big deal. If you don't tell everybody everything about yourself, it's no big deal. You be authentic, and it's private. Some people feel that way. Other people feel, no, if you're authentic, it must be public. You've got to be all the way. You've got to be your true self all the way. What do you think? Well, I'm going to give you some criteria to examine about what is authentic and what is not. But let's just take an example of what people consider themselves to be true to themselves. If you are somebody who has had a lifelong need to be appreciated for what you do in your work, and you've just strived to get appreciation from the world, and so let's say you've written or you've acted or you've painted, and then people say to you, but the reason that you're doing this is because as a child you were never loved for who you really were, so you wanted to become some kind of a star so that the whole world would love you, like we know movie stars and actors and actresses. So when you ask one of them, you know, if you ask one of them, so are you your real self? Are you being authentic? And they say, yes, I love it. I am being exactly who I want to be. But they're being exactly who they want to be because they're getting the applause. Some people base their authentic self on their performance. Other people base their authentic self, and they have some esoteric value, like, as long as I'm giving to the world. But there are people who need so desperately to give to the world, because it's the only way they could ever get love, they have to give. They give to get love. So their authentic self could be Mother Teresa, self-sacrificing, giving. And they say, ah, that's my real self. But you see, it's not a real self. It's an unreal self, because the real self probably is not on this quest for being loved through compensatory giving. Another kind of person, there are other people in the world who feel like their job in life is to take care of anything that is disorder, and they like to put everything in order. And these people are cleaning up the imperfections of the world, their own, about themselves, and about everybody they see, and you know them because they're perfectionists. And if you ask them, are you being your real self, and they may be an accountant or something like that, they say, yes, this feels so solid to me. This feels real. Is feeling real make it real? How about feeling in love? If you feel in love, does that make it real love? Well, you know, it makes it hormones at the moment and whatever else could be taking place. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, helping you inquire into what is your real self. Because I would say that's 95% of the people that I see. People come to me, and they come to me they ask a question. They say, I don't know, you know, what's the matter with me? Sometimes I'm angry, and sometimes I'm sad. Do you ever hear the joke about the man who goes to a psychiatrist, and he says to a psychiatrist, Doc, sometimes I think I'm a teepee, and sometimes I think I'm a wigwam. What's wrong with me? And the psychiatrist says, you're too tense. Got it. Thank you. But people come to me and they ask all the time, what's real? Do I love him? Don't I love him? Should I stay there? Shouldn't I stay there? What should I do? Who am I? Who am I? A huge question. Who is you? You know, who you be? What are you? Well, we're going to ask that question, try to find some ways of pointing at it. There are people who are usually depressed. They are very deep people. They have a great appreciation for depth. They are usually artists or artistic types. They love the unique, and they love to be unique. They tend to be alone and isolated all the time. And when they're alone and when they're isolated and when they're creating something pretty, doing something, they are in their real self. So they could be painting for hours on ends and have no human being in their life. I actually knew someone who had in her life three forks. She was a minimalist. She had three forks, three glasses, three spoons, and three plates. Why? Because she might have one person over as company, or she might invite two people over as company, but never more than that, because she was really very private. So she had three of everything, and no more. It was amazing to go to her house and look in the cupboard. Three dishes. Three glasses. Well, but she was that kind of person. In her perfection, she was a sculptress. And she loved to sculpt, and when she was sculpting, she felt truly authentic. But she was also alone and isolate and depressed. Other people who are hobbyists, investigators, you know, people who dig in and they love to just do stuff alone. They could be playing the guitar by themselves. A lot of these people show up on American Idol, you know, as believing that they're great singers or artists because they've practiced all their lives in their basement with nobody around. And when are they happiest? When they're performing. And it's when they're performing that they're the happiest, but not when there are people there to watch them. It's in the privacy, again. Other people find the only thing in life that makes them feel good is security. And when they feel secure and they feel safe and there is no threat, they say, ah, now I found my real self. Could you imagine Woody Allen, right, who's a comical character who we know is always nervous, right? Imagine Woody Allen smiling and relaxing and saying, ah, now I feel safe. There's nothing to worry about. You know, I don't know what drug you'd have to give him to get him to say that, but, you know, it would then he have found his real self? Or would he have just found a freedom from his terrified self? So a lot of people, they believe that the authentic self is the absence of their bad self. So let's say you're somebody who's addicted. You say, ah, my authentic self is not addicted. It's my freedom from my craziness. My freedom from my compulsions is what makes me authentic. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. There are people who have such tastes and flavors, they just can't stand still. They have to try so many different things. And they say, I am a bird. I'm a bird and I'm free and having a job is not my authentic self, but being free and being able to move wherever I move, that's my authentic self. What makes that authentic? If it's based on the fact that you're always avoiding any kind of commitment or anything that's any form of pain. Then there are the people who like to be in control. There are the people who are always in control, and they're in control. They consider their most authenticity when everything is under control. Ah, my children are in place. My wife is in the bed. My TV is on the channel. My beer is in my hand. Not to characterize it as beer drinking, necessarily. It could be Dom Perignon, 1982, or something like that. It could be any number of things, but the one thing that you could say, now everything is in place. And finally, there are the people who always, the peacemakers, they always want to make sure everything is quiet. And they want to make sure everybody is calm. And they feel that they are being their real selves when they are being in this blessed state of bliss, meditation, so on and so forth. So here's our question. How do you know what is real and what is not, and what is authentic and what is not? Here are some questions. Well, wait, before I place questions, I have something for you. A long time ago, there was a thing called the Velveteen Rabbit. You ever hear the Velveteen Rabbit? The Velveteen Rabbit, I strongly recommend it. It's a beautiful nursery story. And in this nursery story, it's a story about a bunny that's thrown into a place, and a skin horse, who is the oldest one around. There's this old horse that's there, and the old horse has been, you know, in this nursery so long that he talks to this rabbit that just came in, and the rabbit is a toy rabbit. But the toy rabbit asks the skin horse, what's this about? What's this being real about? And the rabbit explains it. The horse explains to the rabbit what it's about. I have the piece here. It was by Marjorie Williams. This is read by Meryl Streep. Let me let you hear this. I hope you can grasp it. It's in nursery. It's a stuffed animal rabbit talking to an old horse. And it's Meryl Streep reading it. And it's George Winston playing the piano in the background. Listen to this.
Horse had lived longer in the nursery than any of the others. He was so old that his brown coat was bald in patches and showed the seams underneath, and most of the hairs in his tail had been pulled out to string bead necklaces. He was wise, where he had seen a long succession of mechanical toys arrive to boast and swagger, and by and by break their mainsprings and pass away, he knew that they were only toys and would never turn into anything else. For nursery magic is very strange and wonderful, and only those playthings that are old and wise and experienced, like the Skin Horse, understand all about it. "What is real?" asked the rabbit one day. "Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle?" "Real isn't how you are made," said the Skin Horse. "It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real." "Does it hurt?" "Sometimes," for he was always truthful. "When you are real, you don't mind being hurt." "Does it happen all at once, like being wound up, or bit by bit?" "It doesn't happen all at once. You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't often happen to people who break easily, or who have sharp edges, or who have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off, and your eyes drop out, and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand. I suppose you are real." And then he wished he had not said it, for he thought the Skin Horse might be sensitive. But the Skin Horse only smiled. "The boy's uncle made me real. That was a great many years ago. But once you are real, you can't become unreal again. It lasts for always." The rabbit sighed. He thought it would be a long time before this magic called real happened to him. He longed to become real, to know what it felt like. And yet, the idea of growing shabby and losing his eyes and whiskers was rather sad. He wished that he could become it without these uncomfortable things happening to him.
That's Marjorie Williams, The Velveteen Rabbit, Meryl Streep, George Winston. Touching. Yes, so what happens after a while? You know, that's one of the advantages of age. As you get older, you know, you stop worrying so much about how you look and how you are. You start saying, you know, it's time to be myself. Here are some questions that you might ask yourself. What have I learned about me so far? What have I learned? What have I unlearned? There's two very big questions. Because, you know, very often we think we are something because we're based on something that somebody told us we were. You know, you're such a pretty little girl. And you believe you're a pretty little girl, and you spend your life being a pretty little girl, and you forget that you're an intelligent human. And being a pretty little girl is not what it's about. You learn that you're not just a pretty little girl. You learn that you're not funny. Oh, you're so funny. Oh, you're so giving. Oh, you're so artistic. You know, it's one of these things that they do to us that helps us separate from ourselves, and we have to kind of look at it. We have to separate ourselves from what's real and what's not. What do you feel strongly about? What do you feel? Feel strongly about injustice, or does injustice not touch you? The truth. The truth. Can you look at people, look at a homeless person on the side of the street and not feel anything and just say, well, that's the choice they make. I choose not to get involved in changing this in any way. Can you do that? What's real about you? What has felt good to you in the past that doesn't feel good now? What has felt bad in the past that doesn't feel bad now? Two very important questions. Think about those two for a minute. What's felt good in the past that doesn't feel good now? What's felt bad in the past that doesn't feel bad now? We're going to take your calls at 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. Questions about values, you know. Here's a question for you. What feelings would you like more of? What feelings would you like more of? And what feelings would you like less of? Think about some of the feelings you have. Which ones would you like less of? Do you get that? Which ones would you like more of? Here's a final question for you just as we start this inquiry. How have you been blocking your own happiness? Have you been stopping it? 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille, with you with a positive mind, looking at things, trying to examine things to help you lead a more positively minded life. We are, you know, there are ways that you validate yourself. Remember, when you were a kid, we are told we shouldn't feel the way we feel. We are dictated not to feel the way we feel. We are told we're too sensitive. We are ignored. We are judged. We are led to believe that there's something wrong with us for feeling however we feel. Any number of things invalidate us. Trying to locate who you are and what you are is a very difficult thing. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Why is everything in pathology with you?
That's how I do.
Why, if someone is trying to do good things in the world for other people, why is that a pathology of neediness?
Oh, I didn't say it is, did I?
Well, it sounded like that. You try to do good things in the world. What's your pathology?
Well, let me ask you something. Do you ever question your own motivation for things?
Well, yeah, of course, everyone does. But
No. Everyone doesn't.
Well, okay.
Only the courageous do.
No. Only self-reflexive.
That's right.
Postmodern or postmodern people do, who constantly are under the tutelage of psychoanalysis, et cetera, constantly questioning their motives and trying to figure out where everything comes from.
Well, wait. You sound angry. Okay.
Do I sound angry?
Yeah, you sound angry.
Well, that's because I am angry, so I guess I would try to convey that in my voice, wouldn't I?
Yeah,
so I'm still trying to wonder, what is it in your background that makes you want to help people? I mean, what happened to you as a child that makes you want to be a caretaker or a caregiver?
Sure. And, you know, I would love to respond to you.
But you're not going
to. No. Let me tell you why I won't. I won't because you're coming at me with anger.
Well, what would you like me to come at you with? Kid gloves, love, new age, spiritual thoughts of peace and happiness? How would you like me to approach this?
Curiosity.
Okay, I'm not. I'm only curious to the extent that, well, I'm not really curious, actually.
Because I'm curious about you, and I'll tell you what I'm curious about, and I'm not going to counterattack you, okay? You said something to me that was very important. You said, I have self-reflection, and I know when I am doing good and when I am not doing good. You said that you have the ability to examine yourself. And that is my goal. That's exactly what I hope for with each person. So you look at yourself and you say to myself, does this come from pathology or does this come from my real desire?
But how would I know that? How would anyone know?
But you
know
do
that?
Know.
No, I don't. I have no idea who my
so do you know that you're...
No one does.
Do you know that you're angry now?
Yes, but that's only on the surface. I have no idea what feelings are behind feelings. Almost no one does.
No. You think almost no one does?
Well, except, of course, the
you do.
The gurus of...
No,
of,
you do. You know what's behind your anger. You do. You
no,
know.
I don't.
Okay. Well, all right. Anyway, this is just a battle. But I would love to answer all of your questions.
But you're not going to. Because it never gets turned around to psychologists, psychoanalysts, therapists, social workers, why they do what they do. Their job is to stand across from someone and tell them, the other person, why or why not they're doing what they're doing, or how can we help you to figure out. But you never have to answer those questions.
No, we don't.
No, that's right. And that's like being a high priest. And that's like being, and it's a great position to be in.
Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
All right, so let me answer his question, but I won't answer it in the face of somebody angry. Okay? You know, what is it all about? Why do we become shrinks? And, of course, how many of us have looked and seen so much pain in our own lives, in our childhoods, as we were growing up, and we said, how do we get past it? Now, I remember as a 20-year-old boy looking at something I was the next jazz musician, and I said, what a mess I am. I have no idea who I am. So I went into psychotherapy, and I learned about myself. And that learning was so valuable. I felt like it was such a freedom. So that freedom is what was offered me by someone who extended their hand. And that's what I would love to offer other people. And is there a pathology behind it? Is there a pathology behind wanting to give? Of course there is. Why don't I just go off and sail off in the sunset and not do anything? Why do we need the millions of people who are listening to this program and passing the word on to them? Why? Well, because I think the kind of generosity, the caring that we put out across the air, I think it makes a difference. And I don't think it's only judgment of people and questioning of their motives. So, yeah, I'll answer your questions, but not if you're spitting in my face. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there, 212-209-2900. Hi there, you're on the air. All right, so some of the things that we do... Oh, I hear somebody there. Hi there. Michael, I know we have a voice there, but I don't hear it.
Oh, hello.
Yes, hi there.
Oh, hi, okay. Yes? Oh.
Yes, we have 2 minutes. Hi there, can I help you?
Okay, right. Well, I guess I was just listening to the other caller, so I got a little sidetracked here.
Did you get upset by the other caller?
I'm sorry?
Did you get upset by the other caller?
Well, no, but, well, yes and no. You know, I was thinking about where he was coming from. Or feeling it, anyway. And I'm trying to recall now your questions about what we gave up about ourselves.
Sure.
Or what we found out about ourselves new.
What did you find out about yourself?
Well, one of the things that I found out is that... I was intelligent, and I felt as a child from school that I was made. I felt very inferior, intelligent-wise. And I, you know, over time, came to with discussions with people who had other, you know, similar feelings for whatever reason in school. School's not the best place for a lot of people. And it took me a long time to discover my own intelligence and appreciate that.
And you do now?
I do.
Mm-hmm. I hear that. Where are you now, by the way? You in your apartment?
I'm home. Mm-hmm.
You're home. How are you feeling today?
How am I feeling?
Today, yes.
Today? Pretty good. It's a beautiful day.
And what is something that you could do for yourself today that would be a wonderful thing you could do for yourself? How about getting out of the house?
You're right. Going outside is gorgeous. I'm looking at my, I have a beautiful yard, and I'm kind of inside doing paperwork.
So what's it going to take to get you outside into the world?
Well, just my will, I guess.
Yeah, our will. And it's a perfect example of where we sit sometimes. What's your name, by the way?
Kathy.
Kathy, sometimes we sit there in inertia because we're so used to it. And it's like we know what we need to do is to be getting up here and taking a move and doing something a little differently. Mm-hmm. And just to do it a little differently. And it's what starts you on the path to finding who you are. You know what I mean? It's the beginning. A walk in the park is the beginning. Thanks for calling in, Kathy. Sure, this is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will continue with your phone calls. listening to Jacques Lussier, L-O-U-S-S-I-E-R, the trio, playing Beethoven. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. Sorry, we had a little intro there. We're talking today about your authentic self and what makes you feel real and not real. You know, and what brings you home to the feeling of self. You know, there's always a question. Like, for example, before we heard somebody call in who was obviously angry, you know, didn't say he was angry, but I said, are you angry? How do you respond? Here are some suggestions to responding to your own anger. Number one, always ask yourself what you're afraid of. Whenever you're angry, ask yourself, what am I afraid of? And I promise you'll find underneath it a quick dissolve of your anger into what the truth is, the fear that lies underneath. You could ask yourself also what feelings preceded the anger. Because very often when people get angry, they use it as a replacement feeling for something like sadness. Like you feel sadness, you feel the loss of somebody. And you feel sad about them, and then suddenly you get angry instead. Ask what other feelings you are feeling besides sad anger. Remember, anger is not just a pure feeling. With it comes a whole bunch of feelings. It could be sadness. Mixed with anger, you could call it sanger if you want. You know, it could be any number of things. Now, whenever you get angry, ask the following question. What are you trying to control? And you'll find that your anger is always an attempt to control something. So you have two things. What am I afraid of? What am I trying to control? Ask, what is it I can really control? This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. So anger is a funny kind of thing. To some people, it's a real emotion. To me, mostly when I see it, it's a reaction that people are having. And I don't engage anger directly. You know, I mean, I could easily. I'm as strong as anybody else. I could yell as loud as anybody. I could shout right back at you. I could take you on in a minute. But, you know. To me, it's like being a gorilla. Not that there's anything wrong with gorillas, but, you know, I don't like going back in time that much. Somehow, I believe we've evolved. And part of our evolution is to go beyond that spot. We just shout at people. Now, let's ask the question. I'm going to take you one more question about disappointment. You know, let's talk about disappointment for a moment. Disappointment is something we do to ourselves. It arises always out of some expectation. Get that for a minute. Think about that. It's based on how we think the world should be and how we think people should act. When things don't go the way we expected them to, it simply means that our interpretation of reality was faulty. If you find that you have a boyfriend who cheats on you, right? And you say, oh, and you get so by expectations, I'm so disappointed. Well, your interpretation of reality was faulty. You thought he was somebody who didn't do that. So the question is not what's real and what's not real. It's what is the real reality. Okay. It tells us, disappointment tells us that we don't understand reality as well as we think we do. You can't be disappointed if you're in reality. In other words, our expectations are unrealistic. When you have unrealistic expectations of someone, you get disappointed. How about birthday celebrations? Do you ever wish that you had a great birthday celebration and you wish? I have a friend who celebrates her birthday like she does almost any other day. A small celebration, a little something is all she expects. She never expects anything big. She never gets disappointed. But for some people, their birthday is this huge thing, and they have to have rocket ships, you know, and stars, and it has to be special, and a special this, and special gifts. A more intense form of disappointment is bitterness, which tells us not only did we expect something, but we started to count on it and depend on it. And when we started to count on and depend on an expectation and it didn't come true, we got bitter. Many people use the expression of disappointment as a way of laying a guilt trip on somebody else. You know, consider the parent who tells the child, "I'm really disappointed in you." Ooh, what a terrible thing. The parent who does this doesn't realize that they simply did not know their child as well as they thought they did. "I'm disappointed in you" means I didn't understand that you couldn't complete this task or wouldn't want to complete this task. Your disappointment is not the child, but your misunderstanding of the child. The parent who does this doesn't realize that they don't know who the child is. They turning it into an opportunity to lecture the child will do nothing but hurt the child's self-esteem and cause him to feel like a failure. "You disappointed me. You're such a disappointment." What a terrible words to say to a kid. "Wait a minute, Ma. It's your expectations. Don't let me fill your life. You fill your life." If only we could have said it. A smarter thing for the parent would be to let the feeling provide an opportunity to get to know the child better, as well as a circumstance surrounding the child's life and the way the child makes decisions based on their values, beliefs, and needs. The same idea applies to friends or romantic partners. A more positive form of the same emotion, disappointment, another form of it, a positive form, is curiosity. In other words, we might say to ourselves, "I expected this to happen. In fact, I really wanted this to happen. I'm sad or hurt that it didn't happen, but I wonder why it didn't happen." Such curiosity opens the door to seeking knowledge, which helps getting us thinking back in line with reality. In other words, situations where we initially feel disappointed can lead to wisdom if we allow ourselves to learn. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, 212-209-2900. I hope you're getting some of this. We will not be with you on our regular schedule tomorrow. Thursday, we have a two-hour program starting from 1 to 3 p.m. We'll be offering some interesting premiums and sending you some wonderful programming. So that's Thursday of this week. We will not be with you on Wednesday. 212-209-2900. Let's take another one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Well, we're having a little trouble with the phones today.
Hi, Armand.
Yes, there you are.
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. Great show. Terrific show.
Thank you.
I love the themes you come up with. Your show keeps me real. And I really identify with the caller who was angry.
Uh-huh.
I really kind of understand where he's coming from, and I feel... I don't know. I feel like I don't have the privilege of venting that rage anymore because I kind of, if there's a should behind there, right?
What do you mean?
Well, everything I'm angry at, you know, is basically predicated on things should be a certain way, and when they're not, I feel threatened.
Yeah, you know, I have to admit this. There's an echo. Do you have your radio turned up?
Actually, it's turned down, but I'll turn it off.
Turn it off, yeah.
How about now?
Better, thank you.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that you should say, one of the things that you should hear, is that you lose a certain privilege as you mature. You know, you lose the privilege of just being unrelentingly angry. It's so nice to just get pissed off, you know? And after a while, when you get in learning about yourself, you take away that privilege. Now, you don't take it away when you're a kid. You know, a lot of people take away their right to get angry when they're little because they're afraid to get angry. But once you learn about your anger and you learn that it's a replacement for other things, you don't have it anymore. It's no longer your luxury. So every now and then I see people fighting in the streets, and I listen to them fighting with each other, screaming at each other over nothing. And I kind of chuckle, and I remember when I used to do that. And I say to myself, it used to be really nice to believe that the fight over the cap on the toothpaste was a real fight.
Right.
You know, a fight over who cleans up the house is a real fight.
All my fights are basically just fighting over symbolic wounds, you know?
Sure.
And, you know, the Velveteen Rabbit, it moved me to tears, you know?
Beautiful thing.
For me, I find that, you know, with age, you know, with wisdom can also come bitterness, and that's the obstacle to self-exploration. Don't you agree?
Oh, you mean it's like a hurdle along the way. It means along the way they offer you the opportunity, and they say the following to you, Bob. They say, okay, now look, you're about to get wise. And if you're wise, you're going to become an elder, and you're going to make an impression on a lot of younger people. People are going to learn from you. But before you go there, we're going to give you a little test. We'll give you an opportunity to become bitter instead. And if you become bitter, you'll drive everybody away. Then you won't become a teacher.
It's how to stop the proliferation, though, which is like getting bitter about getting bitter or getting angry about being angry. You know what I mean? Which is very common when you're trying to, maybe too hard to help one, to explore, to try to rush the process. You know what I mean?
That's why you have to get a kitten.
Yeah.
Do you have a kitten?
No.
Did you ever have a kitten?
I've had many pets, yeah.
That's what a kitten is good for. They gotta teach you that it's all kind of silly.
Hey, Amon.
Yeah.
Can I share a very quick story?
Sure.
It's a story about what you're talking about today. The parents and a 6-year-old kid go into a restaurant, and they sit down. The waitress comes over and turns to the kid and goes, "What do you have, hon?" The little 6-year-old says, "I'll have a Frankfurter with French fries and a Coke." And the father says, "Oh, excuse me, no, she won't. She'll have the meatloaf, mashed potatoes, broccoli, and a glass of milk." The waitress turns to the little kid and said, "How do you want that hot dog cooked, hon?" And walks away. The father is stunned. The mother is stunned. And the little girl looks up and says, "She thinks I'm real."
Oh, wow.
And I love that story.
Oh, Bob, beautiful. Thank you so much.
It's a story of all of our lives, I think.
Sure.
And I'm trying to find... once you said you said something very profound to me over the air once, which is anxiety is not real.
It's not real.
But, you know, but the feeling is real, but
sure.
The why is a lie, you know, and I don't...
We get to it over time. It takes us a while to get past these biological imperatives and these frightening things that we have running around inside of us and our own crazy minds that are telling us crazy things. But when we get past it, Bob, when we get past it, it is beautiful. Because not only is it beautiful for you, but it's beautiful for the hundreds of people that you already touch. As bitter as you are, you already are a teacher. And there are people that you touch even by telling this story today.
I think the bitterness for me, I'm too much in my head, but the bitterness, the wisdom comes through tears. It doesn't come through analysis.
Absolutely.
You know? And the tears are just so painful. And if there's nobody there to sort of catch me after I fall, then I go back into the denial again. And that's why good therapy is really hard. I think the guy who called, I'm not going to take his inventory. He's angry because he's been betrayed over and over and over again. It sounds like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Social workers, therapists, you know, well-meaning people who are basically just narcissists at heart, you know. I can see where he's coming from.
Sure, me too.
Betrayal and, like, rage and the demonizing of, you know, of psychiatry, which is easy to do because there are a lot of incompetent practitioners out there.
I believe so, too.
You know, so it's convenient blame. But what happens when I don't blame myself and I don't blame anybody else? Where do I go then?
Well, that's really tough. That's when you get a chance to grow. When you don't blame anybody, including yourself. Bob, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. I'll speak to you soon.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. Yeah, he speaks of that kind of truth. You know what happens when you can't blame anybody anymore? You know, you get rid of things that just get in the way. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just had a question. I live in New York City, in Manhattan. And I just was curious, why do you think so many people are just so angry? Do you think it's because of the economy or I just wanted to get your
take. Well, who do you think? Who do you think are the many people that are angry?
I think a lot of people in New York City are angry.
You think the people in New York are more angry than the people in Wichita?
Yeah, for sure.
So you think that maybe New York City has a generation of energy that there is some kind of anxiety that's generated by New York itself. If you keep in mind the noise level that's out there, the
right.
crowded environment we have, the amount of noise that we have and stimulation we have, that somehow increases the tension level. And when it increases the tension level, it's easier to fire. People tend, therefore, to respond and react more quickly.
Wow.
You know, New Yorkers are known as talking fast and talking straight, and they get to the point right away because they are a little more nervous, I think, than people in Wichita. So I think that there's a general energetic sense. In fact, on Thursday, we're going to be talking about a film that takes the pulse of New York City that I
really?
Think you'll find very interesting. Yeah, be sure to tune in. We're going to be talking just
sure.
about that.
I thought that guy, when he called in, I thought it was so... A little bit kind of like I felt he was a little unfair because I think your nature is to help people, not harm people. And I just thought it was really
so there was an it was automatic for you to feel like you needed to defend me.
Right.
You know? But how about him? Did you feel sad for him?
I felt a little sad for him, too, because
that's,
I think
that's what
he's
I
just
felt.
He's just so complex, and he's so concentrated, and he doesn't know where to go.
He doesn't know how to get touched.
Right, he doesn't, and it's very hard to, you know, call in two seconds and feel you can, you know, help him out from, you know, damage that maybe somebody else did, or maybe he doesn't know better. I don't know. I feel for him also.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for calling in.
No problem. Thank you.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We won't be taking your calls after today for quite a while. Today is because we're entering our fundraising drive, which starts on Wednesday. And once we enter that, there's very little room for phone calls. So let's take advantage of this. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, you're on the air. Hi there.
Yes. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, my good Buddha, Amun, how are you?
Oh, your good Buddha, what's your name?
Donald Campbell.
Sama Campbell?
Donald Campbell.
Thank you. How do you spell that?
Like Donald Duck.
Donald Campbell, thank you. Okay, hi, Donald.
You know, some weeks ago I took my son to Brooklyn, and he said, Daddy, you know, why everybody in Brooklyn is so angry? 6 years old.
Hmm.
But why I really call is, you know, I want the listeners to hear what I have to say, because it's very important, seeing that the history that we're now facing as the human race on the face of the earth right now, there's a 13th century sage by the name of Nichiren Daishonin. And since I've been on this planet, what he said is really true for all of mankind.
And what did he say, Donald?
For all of mankind, there's no greater happiness than chanting Nam Myoho Renge Kyo.
Okay, Nam Renge Yoho Kyo. For sure, the chanting is wonderful because it unites you with everybody. But what about between you and your son? What did you say to your son when your son said to you, Daddy, why is everybody so angry?
I told him that Nichiren Daishonin said, for all of mankind, there is no greater happiness than chanting Nam Myoho Renge Kyo.
That's what he told his son?
Yes.
Oh,
and then I went further on and explained to him why society like how it is.
Oh, that's an interesting thing, because that's probably a very valuable contribution. But you know, one of the things that I hear when a child asks that question is the child is saying, I don't feel safe. And generally what I would do is I may give him the same lesson you did, but I would pick him up and hold him in my arms and say to him.
I will disagree, because he was in the playground with the rest of the kids playing in Brooklyn.
Oh, and he asked you this question while he was running around with the other kids.
No, when we were walking through the streets.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I understand. So did you hold him?
Sure.
That's a good thing.
We always hold hands when we walk.
That's a good thing. You know, it's very hard to give children so many instructions at an early age when they really need to know that they're safe.
Sure. And this is why Nichiren Daishonin was so profound.
That's right, exactly.
He left so many letters for humankind, because he says all human, you know, for human humankind, everyone.
Donald, it sounds like he saved your life.
Well, this is what I have to say about happiness, because you asked about happiness and, you know, really being happy.
Okay, well, listen, I have to get going. I have another caller online. I don't want to cut them off. And I want to thank you very much for your contribution. Okay, 212-209-2900. One more call. Hi, this is Arlen DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello? So that person who was angry, you didn't want to touch him or he didn't want to touch you? Why didn't you want to touch him if he was so hurting so much?
Hi there, because I didn't want to do it on his time at that moment. Because he wouldn't relent the anger, you know?
Yeah, also you said, oh, he was spitting on you. Well, maybe, you know, what's wrong with getting spit out once in a while if someone's hurting so much? Most people, they gush for you. Once in a while, somebody spit on you. Why couldn't you just, you know, reach out to him?
If I knew a way of doing that over the phone, I would. But I hear you upset as well, you know.
Okay, okay, fine. One thing about me, I learned about myself that as I get older, I don't really need so much love like I thought I did in the past.
Yes, I could tell you don't.
I mean, I need it, but I'm not, like, crazy for it the way I was in the past. I can be alone, and I can feel at peace being alone, which is not to say that, you know, when there is that connection with another human being, it doesn't feel good, and it's not wonderful, but it's not like I need it all the time, which is a very good thing to have, be in that place now.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye. No, I'm sorry. If you're going to be in your life, my friends, and you're going to be engaging with people, and people are screaming right in your face, you don't have to engage them. You can say, no, not on this level. I'll deal with you anytime on a reasonable level. Hey, I'll be back with you on Thursday at 1 p.m., my friends. This is Armand DeMille. Great to be with you. Be back with you on Thursday at 1. You could listen to this show on thepositivemind.com.
May 6th at the New York Society for Ethical Culture, WBAI hosts a profound as well as hilarious exploration of the economy with acclaimed economist and New York Times political columnist Paul Krugman and comedian and social political oracle Reno, the rebel without a pause. Tickets for the 7 p.m. performance are $25, but for $50 you can also attend a meet-and-greet cocktail party at 6. Purchase tickets by phone at 800-838-3006 or online at WBAI.org. Do it soon. We predict a landmark evening on which Krugman deciphers the American economic precipice after Reno dives off.